Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. And thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. I'm Zach. I'm here with Laura. There's this really weird phenomenon in my life where there have been a handful of men, maybe half a dozen, who have had profound and positive impact on my life. And their name is Steve. If you haven't listened to a conversation from a few weeks ago on the podcast with my friend Stephen James, you might want to check that out. And then today we're talking to Steve Call, who was my very first supervisor when I was first learning how to become a therapist. Steve and his wife Lisa Call run an institute called the Reconnect Institute for Couples. And it was just really great to sit with them again and hear about their work. Laura and I are really good at tips and tricks and tactics, but sitting with Steve and Lisa today was a really helpful reminder that sometimes that's not the point. In fact, it's probably, maybe it's never the point. The point is the stories that we tell each other, the stories that we tell ourselves, the stories that we know or think we know, and the stories we need to get to know in order to create empathy and compassion and connection with one another. It was a really good experience. It was a pleasure to introduce Laura to Steve and Lisa. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
I don't know where this conversation will go. It'll be interesting, but I think one of the things I really appreciate about Steve is just a massive amount of authenticity. Like, just sort of can't do other, right? In fact, I wonder sometimes about your sense of humor. It's so dry. I'm like, do you, is it in there? You know, but like, it's like what you get is like truly authentic. And for me, who's a little like on edge and kind of a little bit spastic and maybe got kind of a sharper thing. Like, it was a really great, training for me really, really early on to sort of just tone down some of what I always wanted to do, like as a, as a surgeon or as a hunter. So I'm much more of a gatherer, I think. And so it'd be interesting to hear about the work that you guys are doing. As I said in my note, Laura and I are really good at like tips and tricks and tactics. I mean, I think that's what the Gottman method really brings. It's sort of like, here's this toolkit, here's this massive toolkit that you can have. And it almost presents as sort of a one-size-fits-all sort of model. But then, of course, every couple is different and everybody's different. So I'd love to hear about, you know, sort of what you guys are doing, what you're bringing, like what happens when a couple shows up with you and how. And we can just all chat about it because, I don't know, I just think getting more vocabulary and more perspective is always helpful.
Can I expand that a little bit? Because you were talking to Steve. There's two people here, Steve and Lisa, right? Yeah. I guess I'm kind of curious about, you run a Montessori school, you have a private practice. What's the work that you do together? Because obviously we invited both of you on this podcast. So I'm wondering where the overlap is.
Yeah, I think the overlap is Lisa and I about 3 years ago started what's called the Reconnect Institute. And we started that together with the hope of being intentional about offering workshops, in-person connection with couples directly around specific areas I think that are helpful and needed in the experience of maybe group work, but also conference work. And so that we share that. That's what we share the passion for. I think we're deeply committed to the well-being and the healing and the redemptive quality of what marriage can be, because we've found that to be true in our own marriage. And we just have a passion for coming alongside couples together in that way. And it is, I think, a form of play for us. I think Zach's aware of this, but, you know, play is so essential, I think, for us and for the well-being, even for us as in humanity. And I think we have found this to be a playful endeavor.
It's a little more play for Steve.
I love it.
He's a little more comfortable at just being up front and leading and all of that with teaching and everything. But I think the passion for me comes in where it was probably more like 15 years ago when Steve and Dan Allender were doing a marriage workshop, and Becky and I kind of came alongside. We were a little bit part of it, and it was not my comfort zone. It was not what I wanted to do, but we were so impacted. I was so impacted. we saw so much impact on our marriage, and just through story, through studying and like unpacking our narrative and how it interacts. And so I think the passion grew in me that, wow, this is so impactful for us. I want to share this with other people. And so I have to mm-hmm. overcome my, you know, lack of desire to be upfront. And mm-hmm. So we did our first marriage workshop at our church in Seattle, UPC, mm-hmm. back maybe...
probably 4 years ago, five years ago.
No, it was before we moved. So
yeah, so about five.
Maybe eight years ago.
Okay.
It's been a while.
I had this couple, they came into my practice one time and you knew they were in trouble because they sat down and I said, so how long have you guys been married? And they said at the exact same time. She said 10 and he said 6, like at the exact same time. And I was like, whoa, my work has got
a lot of work.
I think time's flying for Steve because he's so happy.
Yeah, time is always relative.
But it was definitely
right?
a few years before we moved up here. Okay. So that was our first experience and we had an overwhelming response. And I think when people would come up and just say, thank you for being authentic, you know, and sharing, because we did just basically share the hard stuff. And I think for me, being a 4 Enneagram, I don't know if you guys do Enneagram, but like mm-hmm. to me, that's so authentic. And that's
you're speaking Zach's love language.
Oh, yeah. And so I think I just, okay, fine, let's do this. But it's a little bit pulling teeth with me. Mm-hmm. So it's more play for Steve, but we have fun. When we're done, I'm really glad we did it. So,
So we do these workshops and then we just started a few months ago, we started the Reconnect Marriage podcast and that we just have been doing that weekly. And again, I would say that's been a form of play, but, a little bit different. And then we did some workshop material online. And so we just, I think.
And some intensives. Steve's been doing intensives in the barn, like a full mm-hmm. weekend. And so we're figuring out how I can be a little bit part of that, but mostly mm-hmm. Steve works with the couple. So we're just evolving. We're looking to see where we can, you know, serve marriages and.
Man, yeah. There's a fork in the road that I can't decide which one I want to go to, but like, I really want to hear about, like, let's say Laura and I are a married couple and we show up, we're like, hey, here we go. Like what happens? You know, we come to the barn and we sit down and like, what's next? So there's that piece that I just want to like, I just kind of want to understand and hear about a little bit, but then mm-hmm. also you've teased it a couple of times. Like, so what did you learn? Like, what did you learn about your marriage? Like what's going on there? Like,
yes, yeah. Actually, can we go down that? Cause I'm sure. really curious sure. about your experience. Cause Zach and I have been sharing this like podcast experience and we've also mm-hmm. taught together, do workshops together. Right. And I always walk away from doing therapy. My husband's says that we always have the best sex after I've had the hardest clients. And mm-hmm. the reason is because there's an amount of gratitude that I end up having in him, but I don't get that process of interacting with my partner the same way that you guys get to interact with each other, because Zach and I are not partners. We're just business right. partners. We're not right. lovers. Right. So I am kind of curious, like what that looks like. What did you learn from doing your podcast and doing these workshops? Like, are you as authentic and open about the struggles that you're going through now as you were maybe in the past? But that's where I'm, Zach, of like, if you were to serve up those two forks, that's the fork I want to go down.
Yeah, we can go, of course, we can go down that path. I would say over the past few years, we have become more authentic in the stories and in the struggles in our marriage. But in a way that I think is meant to connect with other couples, not to say it's just us or it's just you. I think.
Or not to say, oh, we have it figured out, because right. we don't. And that's the beauty of the podcast, is that literally that morning we'll have a fight and we'll go, oh, this is perfect. We'll do this on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And so every day we have something pretty much that we can share. So we're pretty relevant of like, mm-hmm. oh, this is what happened. And not that we've got it all figured out, or we figured out how to avoid conflict. We just have learned to work through it quicker and we have less defensiveness, I think, between us. So that's a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, so it sounds like you are pretty authentic in what you're sharing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, I mean, it's not the nitty gritty of everyday detail, but mm-hmm. it's enough, I think, to connect. You know, I think what was so beautiful about Marshall Graduate School and the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology is that we spend an enormous amount of time encouraging students and ourselves to pay attention to our story and how our own story intersects with the life that we live now. But where we have taken that is, how does our own story, family of origin in particular, impact the way we live relationally in marriage? And that intersection, I think, is the constant theme of our work, both my work, but also for Lisa and I, but also for the couples that we work with. And so that intersection, the intersection of story within our own family and within our marriage, that very center is what we try to pay attention to. And I think that's what we're consistently wanting to bring to our work, is paying attention to that intersection.
Mm-hmm. So like in our workshops, it's, what's your story of conflict? What, you know, and help couples explore what did you bring, you know, in your story of conflict from your family of origin? What's your story of play? What's your story of sexuality? What's the stories that you're bringing, and then helping them to begin conversations about their own story, and then for them to learn, how are your stories intersecting? How are they, you know, distracting? How are they imploding? How are they, you know, causing conflict, and being able to unpack that? Because it's amazing that we don't really tell the stories of our family of origin until we're in crisis, or until there's, you know, a reason. But so it's more about encouraging, have conversations, you know, and that's been, I think, the most impactful thing for us, is to have conversations about what we went through, and they can just be in kind of benign, enjoyable conversations on, you know, any particular given night. So, but they have a huge impact on how we do things.
I just had the big aha moment.
Like, it's just not my area of strength. You had your aha moment. Why now?
Oh, no. I mean, when you said we don't unpack these stories until we're in crisis. And I was like, yes, you're so true. We don't talk about trust and sex and money and all of these things openly, and like explore what our family of origin was, or what our script is, and how it impacts us on a daily basis until we're in conflict with one another. And I was like, you are so right. And I'm like, kind of want to go down that a little bit more and understand, like, if our listeners are listening to this, and they're like, okay, how do I have these conversations? How do we broach this in our day-to-day conversations when we're on a long road trip, driving home from, you know, Christmas dinner or whatever? What kinds of questions should they be asking themselves? How should they be thinking about it so that they can have these conversations when they're not in crisis? And are there certain topics that you explore? You mentioned, I mentioned, I think, trust, and that's a big one that's coming up right now in my office, of, you know, how trust has been built or broken over time with other people, and how it impacts the marriage now. But I am kind of wondering, what other stories are there?
Well, part of the way we often start is we talk about the story of attachment. That's foundational to the ways in which we then talk about other categories or topics. So attachment, you know, what the attachment experience was like, how available, unavailable was your caregiver, primary attachment figure.
We actually spent a lot of time on attachment.
How did then he or she respond to need? So we spend a lot of time talking about need. The script you have around your own need, how was need responded to you when you had need? How did the other respond? What was the internal maybe message or script you developed around need? Is need okay, not okay? What's wrong with me that I have need? Which then moves us into shame. We talk a lot, spend a lot of time around shame, kind of that internal script of what we think, feel, and believe about ourselves, and how that might then impact our marriage, our marital dynamic. And then we do spend some time talking about play, sex as a form of play, intimacy, not just sexual intimacy, but emotional intimacy. How do we cultivate emotional intimacy? So those are, I would say those are the primary categories, but I would say, how do we invite one another to conversation is it's intentional. There's an intentional, what we would say, curiosity when we approach conversations like that. And that to me is, I think to us even, is the foundation of how we even have conversation, is being intentionally curious about what was conflict like for you? How was it modeled? What would you say to you when need wasn't met? You know, those are just, you know, specific examples.
Yeah. I mean, you can pretty much take any topic, like say you want to take trust, and then you would say, what's your earliest story, your earliest memory of trust in your family? Mm-hmm. What did it look like? Could you trust your mom? Could you trust your dad? Like a sibling, like just so you, and it's usually in times where you're not in conflict, you're not heated, you're just kind of curious. Mm-hmm. Like we talk about curiosity a lot, and it's amazing. Some very simple stories have come out between us that are so impactful that we remember. Mm. And so now it's almost like you see the fuller person, you see the beginnings as part of the person that you're with. So it's just a fuller understanding of, I don't know, the difficulties, the trials, the tribulations that person has endured, or even just the thought process. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I don't think we understand ourselves sometimes as adults. Like we just go on as if we have all our tools. And
I think what you just said, Lisa, is so helpful is these are, I would say a consistent or constant awareness. It's, you know, we were just saying, how long have we been married? 35 years. And a couple of years ago, Lisa shared a story that I had never heard before. And it was a story around when a particular moment her mother was upset and literally went into the bedroom and closed the door. And in that moment, it became even more clear to me of, oh, that's what it's like for you. Sometimes when we're in conflict, I leave, I withdraw, I disengage. And that's the intersection, is it reminds Lisa in that very moment of what was true of, I'm all alone in this. I have to figure this out on my own. I've lost access. And I think what we have become more aware of is those are the stories that are maybe the underlying theme of our interactions that we're not even aware of at times. And I think that's the beauty of ongoing conversation, is we get to learn more about each other through those stories.
Well, I didn't know that story meant that, right? So in order to have him hear it and then reflect back to me like, oh, you felt like you were going to lose relationship if you had conflict with your mom. And I was like, oh, I did? You know, like it's not like you know what you're sharing. You're just sharing stories. And so as you share those stories, you unpack them for each other. You give meaning to them. You say, oh, I'm so impacted by your story. I see what you were going through. And so then there's tenderness, then there's openness. And now you have a new trajectory, you know, in that area. So they can be
so
simple.
Laura, why Steve and Lisa are such a good foil for me, because like I don't have the patience to do any of that stuff. Like even as you're talking right now, I'm like, so what? So what? So now what do you want me to do?
I'm thinking the same thing. Now what?
Now that I know the story, thank you for the story. Like now what am I supposed to do with it? You know, I'm telling you, I really do want to get better at this. I mean, Steve, you got to be Enneagram. You probably got to be a 9, right?
Actually, I'm a 2 or 3.
Okay. He's a three with a very strong four wing, which we're very, and I'm a 4 with the 3 wing. And so
we like to create,
we have a lot of issues.
Yeah. We have a lot of issues daily. Yeah. I'll say daily.
Can you imagine 2 4s in the same room? It's so,
Well, I'm an 8.
You guys, I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay. I don't know anything about Enneagram. It's, I believe.
Well, like I said, I'm an 8. We think Laura's a 7 and I, but I, you know, I definitely have this bias for like,
Googling now.
Figuring it out.
Black and white,
right versus wrong. Yep.
Yeah.
See, and 4s are all gray.
4s
is no. Well, Abby's a thoroughbred 4. So, I mean, we have this dynamic in our house, which is 8-4-2. It's the hardest one.
Oh,
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's really fun for us.
I bet. You know? I bet.
I think, again, I sort of am just like, maybe coming to an appreciation of like, sometimes we just have to let that stuff breathe. And have room to kind of be known. You know, the idea of hearing a story from Rebecca, or Rebecca hearing a story from me that she's never heard before, just sounds so refreshing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, that would be actually really cool. Mm-hmm. But we get so caught up in our certainty, right? We get so up, this is what it is, and this is how it works, and this is how it goes.
Yeah. So. Oh yeah. That's where we get so stuck.
Yeah.
Well, I would almost
say. Did you have another C word?
A C word.
Zach's really big on C words. Yeah. So
alliteration. Not,
alliteration.
Well, you did so that in your book.
Curiosity.
Right?
Like
you
did curiosity, album, right? Certainty. What's the other one?
I wrote this down yesterday.
What's it say?
It says confession, clarity, or contempt. This couple was talking to me about something and he said something in the car and I go, I don't know whether he said it out of confession or as a moment of clarity, or maybe it was contempt, because she definitely heard it as contempt, but I think he tried to do it as a mode. So I had this now, I had to write them down. I was like, C, 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 C,
it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do you do? Can I ask that? Because I am, once couples come in, they have these conversations with one another. Gottman Method would say we have these conversations because it develops empathy for your partner. And empathy is necessary when you're in conflict so that you can extend that grace to your partner when you have maybe tripped over something that has activated a story for them of distrust or a story of abandonment or whatever it might be. But I'm curious for the two of you, what is the teaching or why, what is the why behind having these
What happens? So Laura and I come in, we sit down and we're like, hi, we're here for our thing. What happens next?
What thing are you here
for? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's a, do you have like a weekend workshop or something? Like not the workshop. Yeah. I guess it's the two of us hanging out with the two of you, right? Like, is that a thing that you do?
No.
No,
it would just be with,
no.
You're
negative.
Fired.
You are
it would
not
be the two of you in the context of we're a not double group, dating. Like you know, maybe 10 to 50 other couples, like okay. in a workshop setting.
All right, that's helpful.
You know, I mean, I would say therapeutically, I work from a very similar framework, so it's a little bit more individualized. But I think what you asked too, also Laura, is what's the point or why? Why do we have these conversations? Yeah. What's the hope? I think it's because we crave to be known. I mean, just from the day that we were born, we crave to be known. And how are we known? I think we're known through story. And then when we are known, that to me is where the emotional intimacy that we crave is cultivated, is the sense of feeling and being known by Lisa is, it creates safety. It creates, we'll use Zach's word, containment. There's attunement, which I think from an attachment lens.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Those are what we long for, to create that secure attachment within our marriage relationship. So I think that question often comes up of why. Why do we tell story to be known? And what's the hope of that? Because it cultivates awareness. It cultivates understanding. I'm now more fully known by my partner, by my spouse, than I was 3 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And what does that create? It creates a sense of safety. There's a relational safety, I think, that is cultivated in those experiences.
Yeah, I think the number one word for me is awareness. Like we just say that over and over and over and over. Because, we went to counseling the year before we moved up here. So like 6 years ago, we started off like going to work through some issues. And then we kept going, oh, we'll just go a couple of times. Ended up being a whole year, which was beautiful and wonderful. And we so many conversations we had were like, you thought that, you know, here we've been married for almost 30 years, and things would come up. And I would say, when you said that, you meant that? What? You know? And so like what you were saying about how you just, the certainty that you get stuck in, like, oh, I already know what you're thinking, you know? Well, I didn't. And he didn't know what I was thinking. And all of a sudden it just opened up all this awareness. Mm-hmm. Which just cleaned house. I mean, we just got to where we brought everything as much as we could in out of the closet and just got all this awareness. And so anyway, that disrupted a lot of that certainty, a lot of that stuckness that we had. Mm-hmm. And but I want to go back to just awareness in general when we do a workshop. Like I think, like for example, the story, one of the things that we've always struggled with is how much social to do in our, like, I like to be social. I like leisure to do time. Things with people. And Steve's more of an introvert. He likes more alone time. He'd rather go on a date alone. I'd rather, I would not rather, but I like to have parties. Mm-hmm. I like to, and so all over the years, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I remember one time we were talking, again, like 6-7 years ago. And Steve was sharing a story about his childhood, and he grew up in a military family They moved every single year for what, 12 schools?
12 years, yeah.
Jeez.
And he remembers this one time where his mom said, just go find someone to play with. And so he remembers knocking on doors and getting, you know, negative responses.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Come out and play.
And bike around the hall.
What Disney movie is that?
Frozen.
What's Frozen?
That's totally me and my 15 year old right now. I'm just like, hey, we used to be best buddies.
Yeah, not anymore. We used to wrestle.
Yeah. But the impact of that story on me, all of a sudden, I understood his difficulty. You know, that I can't even put words to it, really. That's why story is so powerful, because just the remembrance of the story softens my need to demand that he
be like you.
Have these social. So I don't know. It's just, there's something, I think our approach is more organic than 1, 2, 3, here's what you do. And it's more about this awareness evolves over an time. Empathy that's so authentic that you all of a sudden, this isn't that important to me anymore, because what's more important is that, oh my gosh, this child that had to go out and find somebody and is just so overwhelmed by having to do that as an adult. And so it's not like, okay, I'm going to have a turn and you're having a turn. It's just like, all of a sudden, it's not that important to me anymore. Yeah. Like there's something that softens. And so, same back and forth with, and so I think we've just seen that happen. And so it's hard to put it into, like, you know, like I said, 1, 2, 3 words, but
it does cultivate that empathy, like you were saying earlier, Laura, like that, like even that story, that is a story of empathy, I think.
Yeah. I mean, in Gottmanese, right? Like Gottman speak, he would say that when you learn one another's stories, especially with like a fundamental difference between the two of you, where one of you is an introvert and the other is an extrovert, the softening is that willingness to yield, the desire that comes from wanting to meet your partner's needs. Mm-hmm. And rather than feeling so stuck on your own need of, I want to go out with like 6 of our couple friends tonight, but I know that you had a big week and you've been putting a lot of energy into your clients and you probably need to restore and you want to spend time with me, but you don't want to spend time with the 6 other couples. Mm-hmm. And so knowing your partner's story and the background behind it, it's not just you putting your foot in the sand and saying, I just want to date you tonight. Mm-hmm. It's, I understand where you're coming from. And because that, I'm more willing to yield and give you your needs, meet your needs. And not always in a yes, honey way, but a way that is from a genuine desire to please your partner, be there for your partner and help them to feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm with you though. I was an army brat as well. I was actually a chaplain's kid. Mm-hmm. And a military brat. So I moved schools a lot and I don't even know, I lost count. But when I went to college in Bellingham, that was the longest I'd ever been anywhere, was for 4 years at a university. And I was kind of the opposite, maybe not the opposite, but you learn to make friends, but you also learn that you can leave friends. And those friendships become more single-serving friendships rather than long-term stay connected. This is before social media would connect people, but
yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I'll have to like look into my introverted ways because I'm similar. I'm like, leave me alone, people. I just need one.
I have a question that I think is going to come up, and it's this one, which is, you know, you guys obviously have a lot of practice, and we're going to hear from people who say, well, my husband, he can't do that. My wife, she can't do that. She doesn't know how to, she doesn't have any stories or, you know, but what? And so I think that's where this word comes in that I am interested to hear you talk a little bit about. It's shame, right? Like, I don't know why I do the things I do, or, oh brother, here you go talking about your childhood again. Like how do you help bridge that gap for people in terms of just understanding that it's not just say psychobabble or kind of maybe even excuse, right? Well, the reason I don't want to go to this party is because I was an army brat. How do you guys navigate that with people who maybe aren't as skilled or as ready to tell stories?
I think for us too, Zach, for, you know, what you both have shared, that is very, I think, essential or common for us, you know, with couples, is that very question or wondering. We don't quite have that language, or it's not quite developed. And that's where I would say, and we could say, oh, I think that's a developmental muscle. I think language is a developmental muscle. Curiosity is a developmental muscle. Intentionality is developmental. So there might not be language quite yet, but could we imagine there might be or could be. Why do we have to bring story into this conversation? Why do we have to always,
have to bring up the past?
Why do we have to bring up the past? Because the past always influences the present. And that, I think, is undoing for so many of us. We just don't want that to be true. That was yesterday. That was 10 years ago. That was 50 years ago. Well, even though it was in the past, it still impacts us in the present. And I think it helps us make sense of why we behave the way we do, why we live the way we do, why we relate the way we do. So without that being intentional, I think it's difficult to navigate moments like that. I don't want to go out with six couples. Well, how come? It's not just that I'm overwhelmed and I've had a hard week. It's that I feel like I can't be what you need me to be because that was true for me in my own story. Is there space for me to have my own need? That wasn't true in my story. So that would be an example, I think, of what it looks like.
I think it becomes less about what I can and can't do or mm-hmm. how I'm meeting your needs or not meeting your needs. But I think like in that story for me, when I heard Steve talk about that, it helped me to understand who he was as a person. So, mm-hmm. oh, you're a different person than I thought you were. Like something about you is a little bit different than I always perceived. And so that the awareness is more about, oh, this is the kind of person that you are. Rather than this is what you need or this is what I need or, and so like, or for him to see me at the bedroom door closed, being sad about, I can't make relationship happen with my mom right now. Part of me is, just needing connection, but not knowing how. Like it's more about, this is the kind of person that I am and his awareness of that. Mm-hmm. And so you don't ask of that person something that they can't do. That's like, it's like you kind of know your children like that a little bit better. Like yeah. we kind of know who they are. We know what to ask of them. We know what not to ask of them. We know what they can do. But I think for our spouse, sometimes you just want them to meet all your needs. So you just want them to be who you want them to be, you know? And, mm-hmm. and so that awareness helps you to go, oh, you're actually not that. You actually don't have that capacity. And so
being accepting of who they yes. truly are.
I don't know. It's just a,
aware.
Yeah, it's
aware
just awareness. I can't even get away from that word. It's an awareness. And so now how can we do something differently? You know, I don't know. I mean, it's yeah. not that you go right to that, but
it takes a measure too of, I think, humility for yourself, right? As you bring in this idea of your children, right? I use this metaphor a lot in my office where I talk about you guys, you know how to do this. If you have three kids and you're trying to get them to eat vegetables, you've got to use reverse psychology on one. You've got to ask politely of the other, and you've got to reward the third with dessert. Like, you know how to right. meet them at their point of need. We just don't do that with our spouses sometimes, I think, because right. we're not humble enough or you know, say agile enough to do, how do I get my husband to eat his vegetables? You know, or how do I get my wife to eat her vegetables? You know, it's right. sort of like, you should eat them because that's the responsible thing because I eat them,
right.
you know, or
yeah,
whatever.
Cause you're an adult and you should do whatever needs to be done. Right. And so I think this brings you back to seeing each other more childlike. Mm-hmm.
You know that Zach and I are huge fans of getting support, and that is why we have partnered with BetterHelp to put you in contact with licensed professional counselors in your area. Tap into the world's largest network of licensed, accredited, and experienced counselors who can help you with a range of issues, including depression, anxiety, trauma, grief, relationships, and more. With BetterHelp's counselors, you get the same professionalism and quality that you would expect from an in-office counselor. With the ability to communicate when and how you want, whether it be messaging, through the phone, or video conferencing. The matching process is quick but thorough. Look, I know that a lot of therapists are booked out and difficult to get into, but don't let that stop you from getting the support that you need. The cost is less than half of what Zach and I charge, which is kind of unheard of. And when you register with BetterHelp, you are supporting Marriage Therapy Radio. Go to trybetterhelp.com/MTR. So it's trybetterhelp.com/MTR to register with BetterHelp. TryBetterHelp, help, HELP.com/MTR. And you receive a special discount as a Marriage Therapy Radio listener.
Okay, I have a question for you. This just came up totally separate. With curiosity, one thing that I have seen some tension recently is when one partner says, hey, I think that maybe what I'm seeing from you might be depression, or I might be seeing ADHD. thirsty, or I might be seeing something in you and I'm curious what this is all about. And it's coming from a place of genuine curiosity, wanting to understand a spouse, but then why are you smiling, Zach?
This is a conversation Rebecca and I have regularly, but I'm not going to.
You're trying to. She's sneaking it in.
I'm not going to out her right now.
Where is she? Bring her in.
Okay. You just did. Right.
Okay. She's stuck in the snow. She doesn't have a car. She's just. This is funny though. Like, longer story, but to your point about introverts, extroverts, she's been stuck inside for 3 days. She needs to be with people, and she's like, "You guys, I'm about to lose my mind. Like, that's why I'm mad at you all the time right now. So I haven't been outside. I haven't talked to anybody." She went to Costco the other day for 2 hours. She's like, I just talked to everybody. If somebody would talk to me, I just talked to them. You know, because
that's a good
having
idea.
Muffled
a good
conversation idea. About Costco. Bananas.
Okay, go ahead. Let's finish.
So the curiosity piece of one partner truly being curious, what is this that I'm seeing? And saying, I think this might be, let's just say ADHD. And you were talking about shame. And so the other partner that's maybe being labeled is shutting down and not wanting to explore that, not wanting to talk about it. And it's just a place of, it feels to me like triggering shame when one partner's genuinely wanting to understand, genuinely wanting to build empathy where it's been a buildup of just like a lot of resentment. There's a reason, you know, all these things are happening. I'm building resentment up. Maybe there's an explanation. I'd like to know more. And then it's a not willing to talk about it in a shame spiral. And I'm just like, how do you tap into that?
I would say therapeutically, that is, to me, that's the essence of what therapy is actually working within the context of understanding shame and how it impacts our marriage relationship. And, we just started a class at the Seattle School a couple of years ago, and it's just a class on shame. How do we teach grad students to work therapeutically with shame? And that, I think for so many couples, like what you just named, Laura, I don't think we are often aware of how shame just entered the room, or how shame just entered the conversation, or how shame just became present in our dynamic. But you know, even that example of there, to me, the essence of shame is this question or the statement of what's wrong with me. Yes, it can be sometimes what's wrong with you, but it's this question of what's wrong with me. There's this, I think, this fear, if you will, around judgment. There is, if you actually know me, see me, fully there, you will turn away from me. And that's the visual image, I think, of what shame is that there's something wrong with me that I have ADHD, for example, like the example you just used. There's an element of judgment. And so we retreat, we hide, we withdraw, or we just react defensively and blame and somehow say it's about the other. So there's, to me, that's the, I would say, constant, consistent dance in moments of conflict is shame is so at play. In the dynamic, because it just has this core essence of judgment. There must be something wrong with me.
I'm going to learn more about that too. That's, I mean,
I know. I was like, is this an online course that we can take?
Sure.
Yeah, can we get a discount of 2-for-1?
Sure. You could audit it. Sure. Join us.
Ooh, well, sweet. I think that's also why childhood stories are more disarming. So like if you're trying to work something out, but why are you like this? Why are you like this? But if it's not in the conflict again, and it's just a curiosity about childhood, like, well, if it's ADHD, like, what was it like as a kid? Like, did you feel confused when you're at school? What was the experience? And it's very disarming, I think, in most cases to talk about your childhood, you know, like maybe a childhood story. I mean, unless, you know, it's about abuse and all that, which again is helpful, but it's hard. I think starting there so that you begin to start in a, I don't know, a less conflictual, more about, I'm curious, I wasn't there in your life, so I don't even know. So tell me about that. And what teacher did you like? But, you know, it could be such benign seeming questions, you know, but yeah, what was your favorite?
Yeah. My favorite question for people is, who was your best friend in fourth grade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you do? And why? And what did you talk about? And
what was that like?
Yeah.
There's sort of a developmental psychology bit about how fourth grade is sort of when you transition into consciousness, you know, so fourth, that story about your fourth grade friend is often one that has a lot of data.
Do you talk about that with your wife?
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah.
But in therapy, you use that therapeutically as well.
Yeah, totally.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because I mean, you're a basketball player, right? So sometimes you find out in fourth grade, I'm really good at defense, right? So that's kind of when you settle into your position. Mm. And that was true for me as a soccer player. Like I'd learned kind of what I could do, and that's what I did on the field for the rest of my sort of successful soccer career, you know, same as fourth grade. Before that, it was bouncing around. So it's been really interesting to let people tap into that, because they don't remember that they went into the woods and built a fort, or that they, that their friend betrayed them, or that they, you know, or that their friend's mom didn't let them hang out with them anymore once they got to middle school, you know, whatever.
But what would you say is the hope of that question? So even that question is, I mean, it's an intentional, it's curious.
I think minimally it's this, which is, if you guys were my clients, I would say, hey, Lisa, I promise you there's stuff you don't know. Steve hasn't thought about his best friend in fourth grade in 20 years. So just, let's just see what happens. Okay. Let's just ask, you know, kind of the same as you. Like,
what, so now that we know the story, what would you say happens?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think it opens the door to lots of sort of aha moments. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I think, again, people talk about their childhood, and mostly, particularly when they're talking about their parents, they're talking about fourth to seventh, like fourth, seventh or eighth grade. Like when I think about who were my parents, that's where I'm putting them. Mm. Right. And so the beginning of that story is the beginning of sort of understanding, like, what was it like learning what a marriage is, right? Mm-hmm. You start to pay attention about that time.
Mm. So you actually
by seventh grade, you've sort of made your conclusions, and now you're sort of adapting to that reality.
Yeah. I like that, 'cause it gives a framework to the stories that you might bring in. I mean, that's helpful. It's not just when you were two or when you were 21, but let's talk about this particular developmental time within the regard to stories.
That's, you can helpful. Steal that. You can have it.
That's thank free. You. Thank you. Yeah. We will.
Hey, we have to land this plane, but I want to tell Laura, you know this story, but Steve doesn't know that I tell it all the time, which is the only time I've ever done triathlons is when with Steve. And so,
oh, I don't know this story actually.
Yeah, you do. It's this story, which is I'm a really good swimmer. So I get out of the water and I'm like top 10%.
Yeah.
And then I'm not that strong on the bike. I had to learn how to ride a bike to do triathlon. And then my legs have given up on me as a lifelong soccer player. I just can't run. So I got out of the water and I was like busting it. I was killing it. I was like, I'm so good at triathlons. And then I spent the next two legs getting passed by everyone, including Steve, who started a half an hour after me.
And he looks like, how tall are you, Steve?
I'm 6'1".
6'1". Okay. All right. You look like a taller figure. So I was thinking, like, for someone who's 6'1" to be passing you up, like, on foot, to me, that seems like you must be going pretty slow, Zach.
I gave up triathlon after that. So
no, you didn't. Did you really give it up?
Yeah. I mean, I still swim a lot, but I can't run anymore. So yeah, Laura and I talk quite a bit about maybe one day we'll do a triathlon where I swim and she does, she there bikes, and we have five some other person to do something else. But
Steve can't run anymore. I mean, I could feel better.
I don't do
I
it.
Could run.
I joined the Peloton cult like a couple years ago.
Oh, me too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
oh,
my God.
Yeah. Who's your favorite trainer?
It has so shaped.
Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite?
Who do you ride with?
Oh, I ride with Leanne, Emma, and Olivia. Oh boy, she's.
Oh yeah, I've seen a lot of Olivia.
I can't ride with Olivia. She's too.
On yours.
I can't ride with Olivia. Yeah. I'm almost 100%. I ride with Hannah Frankson almost 100% of the time.
Okay.
So
yeah, she's great. I love it.
Love
it.
This weekend,
does it too. It's so fun. Do you ride too?
Next year too, I will get 600 miles. I'll be 600 miles in December.
Sweet. Nice.
So.
That's amazing.
Yeah. We'll find each other and like go up the charts and stuff. Yeah.
All right. It'll pass you.
Do you ride too, Laura? Do you enjoy it?
I do. Yeah. I don't have a Peloton. I have the iFit version. Oh, yeah. And then I did just sign up for a marathon training group. I did a half marathon training group a couple months ago. So I'm working on the running part.
Nice. By the way, we so have enjoyed listening to you guys on your podcast.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. You started with the word authenticity. I would say the same for the two of you.
Yes.
Like it's the way you offer yourselves.
We're good foils for each other. We're good foils for each other too. Except this time I'm the old wise one, like you used to be, or like you are now for me. Mm-hmm. And Laura's the spitfire young, like one who's got it all together.
Nice. The Greenhorn.
Nice.
Okay, well, let's officially land this plane. Before we do, though, I do want to know, like, if folks are interested, if they are in like the Pacific Northwest, or they even want to travel to meet up with you, like, what's the best way to find the two of you?
Through our website is the best. It's the reconnectinstitute.com. So it has all the information about workshops, podcasts, therapeutic work, intensives, that kind of thing. So that's the best way.
We're on Instagram.
We're also on Instagram at Reconnect Marriage.
The Instagram. Yeah. Oh, and there's a book too.
There is a book, Zach.
What?
Oh my goodness.
You wrote a book?
I did a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Tell me about the book. Where can people find it?
It's on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, most mm-hmm. outlets you can find it. It really is similar to what we're talking about today, but the title of it's Reconnect, and that's how we've titled all our material, you know, podcast and workshops.
So the podcast, because we obviously people know what podcasts are because they're listening on a podcast, but how do they find you? It's called Reconnect.
It's called the Reconnect Marriage Podcast.
The Reconnect Marriage Podcast, and both of you are on the podcast.
Yes. It's very similar to this. We have a conversation for about 20-25 minutes about a particular topic each week. Yep.
Sweet. Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to start listening. Oh, I'll stalk you guys. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us today, you guys.
For having us.
Such a privilege. Appreciate the work you guys do. And I've really enjoyed our time with you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. Wow, wow, wow. Steve and Lisa, I don't even know. I do know. I just feel very safe in their presence. And I'm sure that is even more palpable when you are doing a live workshop. If you want to learn more about Steve and Lisa and their work with couples, you can find them on their website, thereconnectinstitute.com. They also have their podcast, Reconnect Marriage Podcast. And then also, hey, this is a new function. If you're listening to us on Spotify, give us a rating and go and let us know how you're enjoying the podcast on Spotify. You can always do that with iTunes as well. Join the hundreds of others that have given us a rating and a little, you know, a little shout out, a little blurb of what you're enjoying about the podcast. Thank you for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.